Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the radio.
I like that, Fred.
Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Radio.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker. What is it you like, Bob?
I like the music.
Oh,
Tony,
I do too.
Thunderberg, who does the open for Bob Benyart Live Monday through Friday.
So we have a new opening for Real Science Radio. It's great.
Isn't it good? He's such a super artist, pro-life musician, easy to find online, pro-life musician. Just Google that. Tony Thunderberg. So, Fred, it's time for our annual tradition, our list of not-so-old things.
That's right. DNA.
You're starting right off.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. All right. What about DNA?
Dinosaur DNA.
Really?
Yeah, they found DNA.
Since we did the show last year?
Since we did the show. Last year, we had gotten up to protein, right?
Oh, yeah. All kinds of dinosaur soft tissue, which is now confirmed in so many fabulous scientific journal articles. So where's this published?
It's published in the journal called Bone, and Mary Schweitzer, Dr. Mary Schweitzer, is the lead author with some other big-hitting colleagues in this article.
Yeah. In fact, one of the authors is from Palo Alto Research Center in California. And, Fred, they have not been able to sequence this DNA. It's apparently too degraded, just like forensic science from a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they've got dino deoxyribonucleic acid, DDNA. This is so extraordinary.
It's a great item for our list of not-so-old things.
So, right, things that the atheist, the evolutionist, say has to be millions of years old, and then little by little, science, the relentless march of science, they're finding things like blood vessels and blood cells and hemoglobin and proteins of all kinds in dinosaur bones that are endogenous. That is, they're not external contamination. They're not bacterial biofilms, as some thought they were. Now, mostly that's been silenced, that whole objection. This is actual soft tissue that has not been mineralized. And so we've covered that at length. DinosaurSoftTissue.com, one of the most popular places on the whole internet to get the whole background of all the discoveries.
Boy, and the evolutionists love to use dinosaurs to promote their old Earth views, right? It's their darling. But, hey, dinosaurs have become a creationist best friend.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They can't use those arguments anymore.
They're missionary lizards.
They are.
Because
big time.
We're able to show the truth of God's word. And whenever you trust the humanists and their godless worldview, be prepared to be let down. So dinosaursofttissue.com, we maintain that it is the world's best catalog of dinosaur soft tissue peer-reviewed journal papers.
That's right. So, Bob, do you think the dinosaurs roamed the Scablands?
Okay, the Scablands in, like, the northwestern part of the United States.
They're supposed to be millions of years old, too, right?
It took millions of years to form. They cover thousands of square miles in Washington and Oregon, I think, parts of Idaho.
Yep.
Thousands of square miles. And, yeah, obviously it took millions of years to form them. At least that's what was said for decades. It turns out, and we reported a year ago, the Nova TV show that said, you know what, geologists now agree that it was a major flood. But there's more information.
There is more. There's a lake involved here, right?
Yeah.
Lake Missoula?
Missoula, and that's a big lake. It's like double the size of Lake Erie. And this is at the height of the Ice Age, and there was an ice dam that was hundreds of feet high and hundreds of feet thick, and it was breached. Could have been an earthquake. It was breached. And so within 2 days, imagine two Lake Eries gushing out in the northwest and creating the Scablands.
That's right. And you've got a really good picture of this on the Real Science Radio website, right?
That's right.
So you can go there and take a look at it. And
yeah.
It's obvious. I mean, you can look at this and see what we're talking about here.
Yeah. RealScienceRadio.com/list, which always points to our current list of not-so-old things. And so, Fred, the update, for decades, there was one famous geologist who was saying, look, guys, this is a flood. And all of the geologists said, well, we can't allow that because, you know, Charles Lyell and uniformitarianism and Darwin and all this stuff. So just can't be. No, 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 not a flood. And the evidence was overwhelming. So finally, with the advent of aerial photography back in the 60s, they said, you know what? Okay.
They gave in to the flood.
It's a flood. But they just can't do that, right?
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about the global flood. This was a local flood because there was a lake behind this natural ice dam, mm-hmm. and that dam was breached. So this is a massive local flood, a regional flood. But they just couldn't let it stand, right? They just couldn't.
That's right.
So what did they do?
Yeah, well, don't they claim that there was it 40 floods?
Well, that's how they started.
They started with 40 floods.
Okay.
Because it kind of, you know, 40 days and 40 nights, well, they're going to, you know,
right.
twist that and say, hey, 40 floods.
Yeah. So at first they said, no flood, no flood, no flood, no flood. It's like, yeah. look, all the evidence, it was a flood.
Yeah. Oh, okay, it was a 40
flood.
Floods.
40 floods. 40 floods. Well, look at these layers of gravel, right? Each layer is a different flood. So then, you know how we talked about recently feature creep?
Yeah, we have it all the time where I work.
A customer wants a feature in a software program, then they want 3, then they want 10, then
yeah,
they want 20.
Yeah, we come up with an idea what we want.
Well, this was flood creep because eventually they got up to 100 floods. So 100 times Lake Missoula, it filled, breached, filled, breached, filled, breached. This is a pattern. When you get into this pattern with old earthers, you know it's going to crash down on their heads. They did this with the petrified forests in Yellowstone. We'll talk about this later in the show. Hillside in Yellowstone, where they said a forest grew up.
Yeah,
and then it was wiped out, but one or two trees survived, and they petrified. Then it happened again. Same area. Forest grew up, wiped
out. How many times?
25 times.
25, so not 40.
And so now that's been proved false because none of those trees have root systems. They were transported and deposited in a flood.
And they've taken down the sign. I think you helped make that happen.
That's exactly right. And so same thing with the epicycles. Remember before the Christian cosmologists, they got the heliocentric thing worked out and the elliptical planets. And so before that, it was the pagan Greeks like Plato and Aristotle. And they said the earth was in the center and the planets went in perfect circles around us. And then they did these epicycles, these little circles. Mm-hmm. And then that didn't work. So they had to add more epicycles and more epicycles. And it's just like, you know, more layers of petrified forest. And remember the jellyfish, we'll get to that, where they just kept coming back, had a family reunion, and they kept getting buried in the same spot over and over for a million years. And plate tectonics, you start with a few plates, pretty soon you have family reunion, Thanksgiving, all the plates are all everywhere. And so here, 40 floods they started with, then they were up to 100 floods. Well, what's so neat is that there's so much evidence that's come out that, you know what, really, it's just one flood.
That's right. And a guy nearby did his PhD thesis from University of Colorado. He provided the evidence and it was published in a scientific journal.
In fact, we have Michael Ord to thank about this in the Journal of Creation published by CMI in Australia. And he has an article in a 2012 journal. And he says further evidence of only one large Lake Missoula flood. So they want there to be 100 floods. So there's evidence that the Bible chronology is just flat out wrong.
So let's see, you guy went down and he checked it out, right?
Yeah.
He actually investigated it.
And he found some very powerful evidence. Looking at the lake bottom, this Lake Missoula that mm-hmm. supposedly flooded 100 times.
Yep.
He said, when you look at the deposition at the lake bottom, you see that when it flooded, when it drained rapidly, it created channels, which is natural, right? That's what would happen mm-hmm. when water drains rapidly. It erodes out the channels where it's running out of. Those channels are only in one layer of the sediments at the bottom of the lake, and they're in the upper layer
of
the
sediments.
So you
don't find evidence of drainage at lower layers.
Right. So you don't find initial channels where it flooded, drained out, then that was covered up by sediment, then more different channels. You don't.
Water moving fast is pretty powerful, and
yes.
you're going to get erosion. And, you know, reminds me of the flat gaps in the Grand Canyon.
Oh, yeah.
There's no erosion between these gaps.
Right.
And yet those are supposedly laid down
millions of years apart, some of them.
Yeah.
Now that they admit that geologists generally around the world, scablands happened from a flood, they said, oh, but it was 100 floods. And now, no, we're back to really, guys, it was one flood, along with other evidence.
Yep.
Okay, what's next?
Well, how about the land speed record? Who holds the land speed record?
The cheetah.
Now, that's probably true, actually, for an animal, but what about for a mountain?
Fred, mountains don't sprint.
What about the Heart Mountain Detachment?
Who, that one did
that one that supposedly took millions of years.
Well, you'd think it would be slowly. This huge mountain in Wyoming, it broke apart, and you'd think it would do so slowly by uniformitarian processes, right? That's how everything happens. It takes forever. Well, it turns out that this is mainstream scientists. We link to these sources. They say, no, it broke apart pretty quickly.
It broke apart and went 62 miles in 30 minutes. That's pretty good.
30 minutes. Land speed record. Mountain moves 62 miles. So this mountain, this rock that covered 425 square miles, it broke into 50 pieces, and now they've slid apart over an area of 1,300. That's 1,300 square miles in a biblical, not a geologic time frame.
Yeah, and if you were there when this happened, you better have a pretty fast car because you'd have to go about 120 miles an hour. Oh. That'd make for a good Hollywood movie.
Yeah, that sure would. All right, so what's next on our list of not so
well? Well, the next one, I like these. So we got ink from a squid and from a cuttlefish.
Yeah.
You know, they got ink to kind of help some, you know, with predators and stuff. And hey, this ink that they're looking at, this fossilized ink from squids that are supposedly millions of years old.
They say 150 million 150 years old, million. According to the British Geological Survey.
And this one guy says the black ink was exactly the same structure as that of today's version. Shocker.
Yeah. And so they're just astounded how the fossilization could be so perfect. And when they broke open this three-dimensional sack, this ink sack, they pull out this material and it's dehydrated, but it's still ink.
Yeah.
All they had to do was add water, just add water. And an artist took a pen and with the squid's own ink, it drew a picture of the squid.
Amazing.
This is. And so what creationists point out is that, hey, chemical structures fall apart all by themselves over time due to the randomizing effects of molecular motion.
Yeah, there's no way this ink is 150 million years old.
No.
I mean, come on.
Fred, not to be outdone by the squid, the cuttlefish.
Yeah, the cuttlefish came in, and its ink was strikingly similar to that of modern cuttlefish. Of course, I'm quoting an evolutionist.
And this is National Geographic. Yeah, when they say strikingly similar, they usually mean identical.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't it evolve in 160 million years? I mean, we've gone from dot matrix printers to laser printers to inkjet printers. What's with this cuttlefish?
And they say it's indistinguishable from modern ink.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's so cool. And so this is our list of not so old things. All you have to use is your common sense. Just like an army of geologists said, no, the Scablands, no flood. All the evidence was there in their face, but they wouldn't admit it because of their worldview. Their worldview turned them away from objectivity to see what they wanted to see, even though the evidence was overwhelming.
So what about one of our favorites, the family reunion fish? Which fish is that? Is it peanut butter fish?
This is the best. It's the jellyfish.
Oh, the jellyfish.
Yeah. The jellyfish, this is in central Wyoming, and this is well established. We also have nice pictures of these jellyfish at youngearth.com, a website that Fred and I maintain. It's very popular. Just Google Young Earth and click on youngearth.com. You'll see how high it comes up in the rankings. Lord willing, eventually it'll be number one. That'd be cool. But Fred, what is it with these jellyfish? There are seven layers of strata.
Laid down over
a million years.
1 million. 1 million years.
1 million years. And now it's a quarry. Back then it was a beach, apparently.
Yeah.
And what they say is that jellyfish, even Charles Darwin said, would hardly ever, if ever, fossilize because they don't have skeletons.
Yeah.
So it's an extremely rare thing for a jellyfish to fossilize. But it has happened.
It has happened.
In this one location, they have a school of jellyfish fossilized throughout seven layers. This is reported in the journal Geology.
So imagine seven layers vertically, and you've got jellyfish all scattered throughout them.
They're all seven layers, and they say that those seven layers took a million years to lay down. Okay, so we have here a polystrate fossil. Polystrate fossil is one fossil that sticks up vertically through multiple layers. And when those layers were supposed to be laid down over thousands or millions of years, then the evolutionist has a problem.
So I see three possibilities.
Yeah.
Okay, the jellyfish back then could live for a million years.
Yeah.
And they got fossilized same time.
And they just stayed there
while the
sediments were laid down. Okay.
That's right. The second possibility is, our favorite, the family reunion.
Every 100,000
years or so,
the same school, their descendants, would go to the same spot in a lagoon, and some of them would get buried.
That's right. It was their tradition. They felt like they needed to be buried
years.
With their other family members.
Right. Didn't happen around the world, just there at that one lagoon.
Yeah. The third idea, I think, is that there was maybe some kind of global water catastrophe that buried them all at the same time.
Yeah, they were all buried at the same time. And so those seven layers right there were not laid down over a million years. Just like the petrified trees in Yellowstone, it all happened at once. And so once an objective scientist looks at that and says, you know what, that's true. Those seven layers, they must have been laid down in the same event, and it caught up the same school of jellyfish.
Those with common sense and real science pick door three.
That's right. And then when they do, they follow that same strata and see how far it goes. Sometimes it'll go 10 miles, 100, 1,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever it goes, you realize that it wasn't a million years. You compress that to one event that caught one school of jellyfish. And as you do this around the world, the whole geologic column collapses into something that happened rapidly.
That's right.
It's fun.
So the next one is kind of already talked about it, the petrified forest in Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good one, right? I mean, for the longest time, they thought these trees were buried down over time.
Yes.
Little by little, you know, one forest got buried, then another one on top of it, this and that.
Since last year, we've put in a Freedom of Information request with the National Park Service, asking them for a photo of the sign that they used to show explaining how each of these layers were laid down over thousands of years for each layer, and one forest grew on top of another forest, and it happened 20-some times. And now they took down the sign because we worked with one of our listeners, and we never gave his name because, you know, he could be persecuted being a creationist.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a ranger at a major national park, and Cheryl and I had dinner at his home with him and his wife, and we looked at this and the fact that there are no roots and these trees, the petrified trees at Yellowstone, they did not grow there. They were transported.
Yeah, just a root ball, right? Tree and a root ball.
So,
and we saw the same thing after Mount St. Helens with the trees that were buried in Spirit Lake.
Dr. Stephen Austin, exploring Spirit Lake after Mount St. Helens blew, he saw the same thing. Trees were floating, 100,000 or more trees, and they got waterlogged, and they started to sink vertically.
Yeah, because the root ball is the heaviest part, right? So that's
right.
The part that's going to go down and plop and stick
and
in the dirt.
It sticks in the bottom of the lake, and then the volcano shoots something else out of its mouth, and you got another layer of sediment settling to the bottom of the lake, and these trees are being buried gradually.
Mm-hmm.
But it was catastrophic.
Yeah.
They didn't grow there.
Yeah.
And so
gradually, like in a month, not millions of years.
Right. And so Yellowstone, at least they took down the sign that misreported the science. Now we don't have a photo of the sign.
Yeah.
We want a good photo, and they've responded to our Freedom of Information request with the wrong sign. They did give us a picture of a sign. It's
a
wrong
thumbnail
sign.
Picture, yeah.
So we're still trying to get the right sign, and we'll refile that this year.
So, Bob, this next one, I got a question. If we transported somebody from England from 1,000 years ago to today who speaks English, would we be able to understand him and us?
Very hard. Fred, when we read old English stuff like Beowulf, or even Watt, the King
even
James.
The original?
That's only 400 years. That's pretty tough. But you go back to the earliest English literature, it's pretty tough.
It is tough. So language, it changes. And so what happened with the bees? So we've got bees that are supposed to be 7 million years apart, the Asiatic and European bees.
Yes.
And so, hey, if that's true and we put these bees together, they're going to be so confused. They ain't going to be able to talk.
No, of course not.
At all.
Right.
They're just going to sting each other
out
of anger.
And researchers, it turns out that researchers did this. This is a peer-reviewed paper in the Public Library of Science, plus one. And what did they find out, Fred?
They found out that there was a failure to communicate?
No.
No. Okay. Oh, sorry. Too
turns,
much.
Turns out that they were able to communicate.
What we have here is not a failure to communicate.
Right.
They communicated easily.
Perfectly well, thank you. Asiatic honeybees can understand dance language of European honeybees, and it shocked the evolutionists.
That's right.
Because they said after 7 million years, I mean, these bees, they never even evolved a written language.
Yeah.
Written language helps you retain your language structure. If you don't have a written language, I mean, they don't even have a spoken language. They have a dance language. And so they say, how could it be that they remember the language for 7 million years? It didn't change. And the obvious answer is they weren't separated 7 million years ago. The earth is young, and all your knee-jerk assumptions of millions of years are make-believe. You're seeing what you want to see.
Yeah, and you know, when I first got involved with creation science, the argument was that 90% of all the clocks we can look at point to a young earth and 10% old earth. I totally disagree with that now. Mm-hmm. It's like 99.9%.
Right.
I mean, this list we do grows every year.
Yeah, it's the list of not-so-old things, because oftentimes, the very evolutionists themselves say, you know what, we thought this process would take a million years, and here it happened in 2 days. But then other times, there's this evidence that stares you in the face, smacks you in the head, saying, look, this could not be 150 million years old. It's still organic.
And they're flabbergasted. They don't know what to say. So that's why we see words like shocking.
Yes. Like from Archaeopteryx. They found in the Archaeopteryx fossil, so famous, from Germany, they found original biological material. And they say it's 150 million years old. All right, what's next, Fred?
How about Carlsbad Cavern?
Ooh, that one is fun, because we've updated that in the last year at youngearth.com. And Fred, that's another example, just like Yellowstone, where they changed the sign. Carlsbad Cavern, my family and I went there, and the sign used to say, for decades, it was 260 million years ago that it was formed. Then they changed the sign, right?
Yeah, to 8 million years ago.
Hey, they're doing better.
They're doing better.
In the last year, we got the original source document where there was an interview with a cave expert geologist who works for the U.S. Forest Service, and he's a native of this area. And so he's the source for this information. And he pointed out that then they changed the sign again.
To 2 million years.
2 million years. And then he said, and I could confirm this because Cheryl and I took our boys to Carlsbad Cavern. They took the sign down.
Why didn't they just put a sign that said 0 million years? I mean, they're out of pattern here.
They should have done that, right? 0 million years ago. They say now, and this is correct, they say you can't come up with a rate of formation for the cave, because it depends on the amount of available water. If there's a lot of water, it could form rapidly. And that's what they say, and that's accurate. That's true. You know, somebody go there, somebody who's ignorant of the actual data, and they'd say, well, this is 260 million years old. The Bible's chronology must not be true. Jesus must have been wrong when he said God made us male and female. At the beginning of the creation, we obviously were created hundreds of millions of years after the beginning, but Jesus was right, and the signs were wrong.
They were wrong, and hey, to their credit, they got it right now.
Yeah, they did.
The signs are gone. So, Bob, what's a Lloyd?
It's a Lloyd?
Yeah, a naughty Lloyd.
Oh, they're some of my favorite creatures. Remember the Nautiloids. Fred, this is new for our list since last year, and this is at the Grand Canyon. Nautiloids are these marine creatures that are extinct. They look like elongated ice cream cones with a squid on top. Instead of like a double scoop or a triple scoop, you got an ice cream cone with a squid on top.
Yeah.
And they're in rock. They're in limestone at the Grand Canyon. But don't they say that limestone forms very slowly over millions of years?
Yeah, of course. Everything
does.
Yeah.
Everything does. The ring on your bathtub. Millions and millions, billions of years. So
there may be some truth to that.
Of course, everything forms, takes millions of years, almost everything. But they say, and this is crucial to the evolutionist, if limestone deposits rapidly, their entire worldview collapses. And so here at the base of the Grand Canyon, There's a 7-foot-thick limestone layer that goes for the whole length of the canyon. And every 4 square meters, they find a nautilite fossil that's about the size of your arm.
Wow.
And they're buried rapidly. Otherwise, they would all be decomposed. You got beautiful nautilite fossils. It was a mass kill. About 15% of them are buried standing up vertically on their heads.
Standing on their heads?
Yes.
So they decided they had had it in life, and they did a headstand. And
they stayed there for 480,000 years.
Let themselves be buried that way.
As the limestone collected around them. So what we also added is an abstract from a paper delivered in Denver at the meeting of the Geological Society of America. And Fred, this points out the mass kill of nautiloids in the red-walled limestone layer at the Grand Canyon. That's the Mississippian layer. And it's really neat. They say you go for 244 miles, and everywhere that that layer surfaces, you find them. And then they went as far as Las Vegas, because that layer goes right to the strip where they did construction. The layer is exposed on the Las Vegas Boulevard strip, and there are nautiloids right there.
That is one mass kill. So, you know, all these nautiloids, just tons of them buried in this huge area.
Over a million.
There's no other explanation other than this had to be from a global flood.
Yeah.
How else can you explain it? You can't.
Was
you might as well truly
rapidly.
Believe in Alice in Fairyland, you know, to think,
well,
and
your
try
website
to explain this.
Is called evolutionfairytale.com.
Evolution, a fairy tale for grownups.
Yeah. And so these nautiloids, I brought this up in the debate with Aaron Ra we had in 2012, mm-hmm. written debate, and he's completely in denial. He says, first of all, they're not there. They don't exist.
He didn't first say, what are nautiloids?
No. What are people, Lawrence Krauss? No. He said, first of all, they're not there, which is delusional.
Yes.
But then I said, well, what if they are there? What does it mean to the slow deposition of limestone? He said it means nothing.
Yeah, he refuses to admit it.
Right. This is somebody who has blind faith mm-hmm. in their worldview and will resist the data almost to the death.
Yeah, absolutely. The fingers are in the ears. And
so,
la, 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 la.
Fred, we are right. We're out of time for this. Why don't we continue our annual tradition and make a part two out of this list of not so old things?
I think
things.
That's a great idea. We got so much more to go through.
Yeah. So thank you, Fred, for another great episode of Real Science Radio.
Great to be here. Youngearth.com. A lot of this stuff, great pictures.
Yeah. That's and really, by the way, well we have a Real Science Radio podcast. If you subscribe to that, that encourages Fred and I and the whole crew, Jamie and Daryl and Wally and Connie and Al. It encourages everybody because we see the growth of the outreach of the program. So you could subscribe to the podcast. Also, if you click on our store, the store, go to the science department. You'll find wonderful resources. And here's Tony Funderburk. I don't want to interrupt him.
It's awesome. Good
stuff. Let's listen to Tony. God bless you guys.
By the handiwork of God, tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Is there evidence that God exists? In Bob Enyart's video seminar, Does God Exist?, Bob presents the evidence that God does exist and the evidence that teaches us about God's character. The 2-DVD video set, Does God Exist?, is now available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART and at kgovstore.com. Again, that's kgovstore.com.